The Blaze Radio Network. On demand. Glenn Beck.
Well, once in a blue moon, Bill Maher actually says something. He veers into common sense and takes a stand on something that even conservatives can get behind. Friday night was one of those rare occasions he defended Laura Ingraham on principle. Now, he did come out and say, you know, I also want you to know this sounds ridiculous because I think she's a deliberately terrible person. So, I mean, he did qualify it. He's not in love with Laura Ingraham. He's doing something more important. He's standing on principle. So after 2 months of conservatives pointing to the fact that the Parkland Brat Pack should be willing to take some criticism if they're going to launch their attacks on conservatives through big media, someone on the left has finally made that same argument, and it turns out it's Bill Maher. Here's what he said.
But it has to do with the Parkland kids and guns and free speech. Now, I think those kids did a great thing. They put this issue in a place we've never had it before, and I wish them success. But, you know, if you're going to be out there in the arena and make yourselves the champions of this cause, people are going to have the right, I think, to argue back. Okay. Maybe you shouldn't say that about a 17-year-old, but again, he is in the arena, and then he calls for a boycott of her sponsors. Now, is that American? To call for
let me explain something.
And he complains about bullying. Bullying. I have been the victim of a boycott.
I lost a
job once. It is wrong. You shouldn't do this by team. You should do it by principle.
Wow. Yes. So empathy is a huge missing ingredient in our national dialogue. So is common sense and clear thinking. But it's what allowed Bill Maher to defend Laura Ingraham, because he knows what she's going through. After the 9/11 attacks, he disagreed with characterizing the hijackers as cowards. He said, "We've been cowards, lobbying cruise missiles from 2,000 miles away." Well, that led to a boycott of his sponsors on ABC, which then canceled the show called Politically Incorrect. One of the most amazing things ever. That's why, in principle, right after 9/11, and you can imagine how popular this was, I took the stand of supporting Bill Maher, not for what he said, but what part of Politically Incorrect did you not understand, ABC? That's what this man does.
Why you hired him.
Right. And if we cannot let name calling and political thought come under control from a mob, left or right. That's why you don't want democracy. Democracy is mob rule. It's majority wins. That doesn't work. And by the way, this isn't even majority wins on these boycotts. This is just a handful of people who are really dedicated to making people's lives miserable, and so they get their way. But Maher got this right. This is about principle. And the worst lesson that the Parkland kids and the rest of America's youth are learning for all of this is that an inability to agree to disagree. We have to be able to get there. It's not enough for the left anymore. If they don't like your viewpoint, their only response is to try to destroy your livelihood and drum you out of the market. To me, that is much more dangerous to society than any number of guns.
It's Monday, April 9th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So there was a movie that premiered on HBO over the weekend. It was a movie about Penn State. Robert De Niro played Joe Paterno. And it ended looking like things were even worse. I don't want to give away the end line in case you want to watch it. But it was not making Joe Paterno look like he was... like there was any shadow of a doubt that this guy was a bad guy. Well, John Ziegler is a friend of ours and a friend of the program. He's a columnist at Mediaite, and he also runs the podcast, The World According to Zig, which is worth a listen at freespeechbroadcasting.com. John has been John has been following the Joe Paterno case for a while and will not let it go. he was writing a massive story for Newsweek. It took months and months to do. They spent a lot of money on it. And then at the last minute, they pulled it and killed the story.
And quickly, Glenn, this is my fault, and I do this all the time. I always confuse Robert De Niro and Al Pacino. It was Al Pacino who played Paterno. It's my fault. I did that to you in the break. My bad. Yeah, Jonathan's been all over the story for forever, and he joins us now. John, first of all, did you actually watch Paterno on HBO?
I did eventually bring myself to watch it, and I was able to do so without vomiting, which was, I thought, an accomplishment. But it was interesting historical fantasy. It was a fairy tale based in a media-created myth. And to be fair, to say I followed the story for a while...
No, you were a stalker.
Well, I'm the only person who has looked at this from an independent perspective, not within the media industrial complex that jumped to a ridiculous conclusion in 2 days back in November of 2011. And I know more, and this is not an exaggeration, I know more about this whole Penn State Paterno Jerry Sandusky story than anybody on the planet, including Jerry Sandusky. And Jerry Sandusky would be the first person to tell you that. And it's been the worst decision of my life, but it's also been the best work of my life, because what I have found is a completely and totally different reality than the myth that you've been told for the last 7 years.
So, John, I want to get into this because I'm so fascinated by you and this cross that you carry, because I know what it's like to know something and no one will listen. I mean, I got the caliphate is coming. Oh, you're an idiot. Okay. All right. And it will drive you out of your mind. But take me to Newsweek, because you thought, okay, finally somebody's going to do something. And Newsweek, what was it, like 11,000 words?
20,000 words on the website, 15,000 in the magazine. Here's what happened. For many of your listeners and viewers probably remember that a little over a year ago, you guys had me in Dallas for a full day of interviews about this. You're the only ones with the guts to do anything like this. And I thought at the time, all right, you know what? That's pretty much the end of this for me, because there's nowhere else for this to go. Nobody, you know, you guys, you don't really care about being part of the media club. And no other big media is ever going to accept this, because they're too invested in their myth, their Santa Claus myth. And so we got a huge break at the end of last year, where Newsweek hired as their top editor a guy by the name of Bob Rowe. And Bob Rowe had worked on the McMartin preschool sex abuse case here in California many years ago, which turned out to be a fraud. So Bob Rowe got it. And Bob Rowe didn't care about any kind of criticism he was going to get. He also had a previous relationship with my co-author on this, what would end up being this proposed and accepted Newsweek piece, Ralph Cipriano, an LA Times and Philadelphia Inquirer reporter. He and I have been working on the case for quite a while together. And so he hired Ralph. Ralph brought me on as his co-writer. And then so this was back in October of last year. And we had gotten a huge other break in that Ralph had been leaked all of the settlement documents from Penn State's $118 million that they gave the 36 accusers of Jerry Sandusky. And I think all of the free report documents. And I went to Philadelphia for 2 days and reviewed the documents, and they're unbelievable. I was positive I was right when I was with you guys over a year ago. Now it's not even remotely close.
Okay, so what did you see in the documents that make you say that?
It's all science fiction, Glenn. Every bit of it. The guys who were at trial told completely different stories when it came time to getting their money from Penn State, because that's how Penn State was paying out their money. We know the so-called 70s accusers that supposedly implicated Joe Paterno that got referred to in that Al Pacino movie, by the way, incorrectly. They couldn't even get the right accuser. They can't even get their myth right in this movie. They referred to a 1976 accuser. They meant 1971. These guys' stories are hilarious. And I now know the key thing, Glenn, and this actually goes kind of to the Parkland situation. You know how the Parkland kids are protected, right? That's nothing compared to the Sandusky accusers, because I now know their identities. And we have this bizarre situation where adults, sometimes very old adults, getting state money, millions of dollars, are not allowed to have their names It's not a legal situation. It's a media decision because out of cowardice, they're not allowed to have their names be public because that would be insensitive to sex abuse victims. Well, guess what? When you know their identities, you know a lot about them, and you know how ridiculous their stories are. All you have to do is go to their Facebook pages. They're all still huge Penn State fans. They're all still Joe Paterno fans. They've got pictures of themselves at Penn State games in Penn State uniforms and Penn State shirts. Their children in Penn State shirts. They're all got massive, expensive sports cars. They're all married. They're all heterosexual, which I think goes to the and heart of this whole baloney narrative. There's nothing about the story that makes any damn sense. None of it. And when you consider the fact, and part of what Newsweek was very excited about, was that we have had a 3.5-year sting operation on the number one lawyer named Andrew Shubin in State College, Pennsylvania, and his therapist with unimpeachable evidence that they took this fake accuser for 3.5 years. They embraced him. They manipulated him. They gave him a completely false story. Then when he tried to tell him he wasn't really a victim of Jerry Sandusky, they convinced him that he was, even though he wasn't. And he got diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder for something that didn't happen.
That he says didn't happen, right? Because you've told the story.
Glenn, let's be clear. This is a purposely fake accuser. He's a guy who was in the Second Mile charity, Jerry Sandusky's charity. He knew him for much of his youth. His mother knew him. And he decided, you know, Jerry is innocent. This whole thing is baloney. He went to the trial and was told by Matt Sandusky, who is now, you know, an alleged victim of Jerry, that this is all bull crap. He knows that Jerry is innocent, and he decided to try to prove it. And so he went to the number one lawyer in the case that completely embraced him, and he sat him down and totally changed his story. Made up a story because he knew that the original story he was given was so ridiculous and that Penn State wouldn't pay it because it didn't fit the criteria. So he gave him a brand new story. And he met with a therapist over 100 times.
Okay, all right. But the good thing is you're not passionate about this at all, Chuck.
The important part, maybe the most important part of the fake accuser thing, and this I think goes to how this kind of thing could happen, because everyone wants to know, how could this happen? Well, this is a perfect storm, and one of the perfect storms is everybody thinks everyone else is vetting. We have evidence the therapist told our fake accuser that the lawyer had vetted the accusers, and we have evidence the lawyer telling the fake accuser that the therapist had vetted the fake accusers, and Penn State thought the lawyers were vetting the accusers. Nobody was. There was no vetting. I got contacted this weekend by a guy out of the blue. I get this happens all the time, where someone who got $7 million from Penn State, this guy got a call from his lawyer and then from the guy who got $7 million offering him a truck if he would tell his lawyer that he had witnessed Jerry Sandusky kissing him, which never happened. And the guy told him to go pound sand because he knew the whole thing was a scam. I get this all the time. This was a scam.
Listen. I recognize this frustration. I've lived this frustration. So, John, so you had this huge story in Newsweek. When we come back, I want you to tell us what happened, because all of a sudden it was dropped. And I need you to tell the story of what you think happened to get this story spiked.
Glenn Beck.
So at freespeechbroadcasting.com, you can find the John Ziegler article that was written for Newsweek and then spiked at the last minute after months and months and months of agonizing over every word and meeting with attorneys and everything else to make sure they had it all right. John, we've got about 3 minutes. Why did they spike this? Is he there?
The segment was that we had Bob Rowe, this guy with a history, with a similar story in a prior relationship with my co-writer. And I was urging Ralph and Bob, we got to get this out now. We're hoping to get it out last year because I knew that things were not good at Newsweek. And in this environment, in this story, anything that can go wrong will go wrong. Well, Bob got fired the day after the Super Bowl. And I thought we were done at that point. But those who took over for him said, wow, this is a great story. And they were so enthusiastic about the fake accuser and the fact that we have a brand new date for the infamous Mike McQuarrie episode that blows his whole story apart. And we've got all sorts of other bombshell evidence. By the way, the best place to go to find this is at framingpaterno.com, my website, framingpaterno.com, where I posted the entire 20,000-word story that was going to be on the Newsweek website. And one day before the deadline, everything fell apart. And I believe the short answer is because of abject fear. I think that somebody within the infrastructure, whether it was the lawyer or whatever, realized that they were going to get a whole bunch of crap for this and that it just simply was not worth it. And I frankly think the biggest problem we had, Glenn, is our evidence and our facts are so powerful that you cannot conclude anything other than the fact that the whole thing is a scam and that Jerry Sandusky, as bizarre as it sounds, is actually an innocent man. Had our evidence not been as strong, I don't think they would have been as afraid of the story. They would have published it, and instead I was forced to put it up at framingpaterno.com. It's amazing stuff. I hope people will check it out.
So this is not written in your usual style of, John Ziegler rant. You can tell that this is, you've labored over every word. You've checked every word. You had attorneys look at this all the way through?
Yeah, the two editors vetted the whole thing, and it was I had discussions with the printer and distributor of the magazine because I wanted to get extra copies. I wanted to make sure they got extra copies into the state of Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. This was as done a deal as possible. They took the cover away from us at the last minute and put Vladimir Putin on, but I was like, okay, fine. It's the biggest story Newsweek's ever run. It's at least it's out there, and then everything fell apart literally at the last minute, and it's frankly because, Glenn, as you know, popularity trumps truth now in the media, and this is the ultimate proof of that. This story, this whole perfect storm, proves that in spades. The truth no longer matters. This is not a conspiracy theory. What I laid out makes far more sense than the media myth that you've been told for the last 7 years of this incredible tragedy.
You know, John, I don't know if you've ever heard the story of Tokyo Rose and the real story behind her, but when I was writing one of our books, and I took her story and told her story. She was wrongly accused. She served two prison sentences. Trumped up the charges, silenced witnesses in the Navy that were going to be witnesses for her in her defense. And she was eventually pardoned. She's lived through this. This is not a new thing. I mean, that was started by Walter Winchell. They wanted ratings.
Well, it's a good example, but I think this one is way worse because so many people were harmed, the three administrators, the paternal legacy, the reputation of a university, hundreds of millions of dollars put out there. An innocent man, and very strong view, is going to die in prison. And most importantly, if this can happen, our system is broken. Our media is broken. The truth must still matter. And if it doesn't matter in this case, it doesn't matter at all because it's clear cut when you get the details and you put it all together like we have in a very credible fashion. Please check it out at framingpaterno.com. And Glenn, thank you guys for caring about the truth. You're the only ones that do. And it's kept me somewhat sane over the last couple.
Yeah, somewhat. I would leave it at somewhat. John Ziegler, thanks so much. Framingpaterno.com.
Glenn Beck.
Mercury.
Do you know there's over 72,000 veterans organizations in America? They serve the best of the best among us. I always think about, would you ever go? You've never been in the military. You've never served. No, I haven't. And you know who who thanks me for that? The military, the country. They're happy to know that losers like me don't go do that. These are the best people among us. And we do a lot for our veterans, but it's certainly not enough. The government doesn't do enough. They're only giving $300 for veterans' funerals. What does that do to the families? The average funeral costs over $6,000. And we have 72,000 veterans organizations in America, but none of them help with this. None of them help pay for veterans' funerals. DogTagFurniture.com does. DogTagFurniture.com has amazing American flag art that you can put around your home. But in addition to that, they take care of our veterans and their families in the most impossible of situations. All the proceeds from their products go directly to helping veterans' families with funerals at the time they need it the most. Check them out, DogTagFurniture.com. It's DogTagFurniture.com.
Beck.
All right, we've got a couple of things. We got to race through a couple of things. So we have some really important stuff to talk about. But I saw Ready Player One this weekend. I read the book, and everyone told me if you've read the book, you're going to hate the movie. It is not the book, but it is a great movie.
Oh, okay. Good.
It is.
Yeah, I think it's good.
It's a great Steven Spielberg movie.
I think great is a little too far.
Oh, I think it's good. I think it's fun, like
it's
E.T.
fun.
E.T. and, you know,
fun.
Indiana Jones. It's a fun
it's
movie.
It's not a classic like E.T., though. E.T. is a classic.
No, but it's good. Yeah. I thought it was really good.
It's
I really
good.
Liked it. I really liked it. And you guys saw...
Chappaquiddick.
Chappaquiddick.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Really liked that as well.
Really good.
I mean, you know...
And I thought they were incredibly fair on Chappaquiddick.
It did it...
Incredibly
right,
fair.
Right?
Yeah.
It did not feel political at all. I think, gave him, in some ways, the benefit of the doubt on... You know, never said he was having an affair with her.
Though it, right. it seemed like that's where that night may have ended.
Yes, yes.
But clearly. However, they never said it.
Nope.
And the one hole is, how'd he get out of the car? And if he got out of the car, why couldn't she get out of the car?
Yeah.
Why
yeah.
couldn't he have gone back the same way he came out and pulled her out?
Yeah. And bizarrely, he claims to just have forgotten how he got out of the car.
Yeah, but again, I would not look a gift horse in the mouth.
No.
I mean, I'm not. I can't believe Hollywood told this story in the way
you notice,
they
though,
did.
They didn't tell it while he was alive.
Oh, yep.
They waited until 9 years after his death.
I'll take it.
I know.
We talked at to the least producer. It's restoring history.
Yeah.
What was the genesis of the script again?
It was the election of Barack Obama, and I think it was Bill Maher said, well, if Ted Kennedy would have endorsed Hillary Clinton, then Hillary would have won, but he endorsed... Obama.
Yeah, that's right. And these
two writers were like, they're from Texas. They were a big fan of the Kennedys. And they're like, you know, why didn't he ever run for president? And they started looking into it. And they were holy cow, how do I not know this story?
Yeah.
He did run for president.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
They didn't know.
And he couldn't even get the Democrat nomination.
Yeah, no. Yeah, that happens when you kill people.
Yeah. A Chappaquiddick could have had a little something to do with that.
But, I mean, he was praised up until, I mean, he spoke... At Obama, that the conventions.
Oh, they loved him.
He, the lion of the Senate.
Always he's loved him.
Still, I mean, really, Obamacare, really the reason, you know, I mean, that didn't get to change was because of his death. I mean, if you remember, I mean, it's really, he had a heck of a run after that.
Oh, he
despite
did.
That craziness.
Yeah. He did.
Evil is an actual legitimate power. Anyway.
and if you look at the Kennedy history, it's hard not to think that there was something going on with that family.
I think there was one good guy in it, and it was Bobby Kennedy. And the women. I think the women were good. But I really like Bobby Kennedy. Jack was, I mean, you know, it was his dad. The root of all evil was Joe P.
Yeah.
I mean, and was that not a great performance?
Yes.
He had like 8 words
really good.
In that movie.
Really,
and
but he
boy,
was great in that.
Oh, he was great.
You got just where he's coming from.
Oh, yeah.
He was pretty cagey. He was pretty brilliant. And he was a millionaire by the time he was 30. And some of it, you know, he came from shady sources.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Most people believe he had mob ties. Most people believe he ran liquor during the Prohibition. But he also had some incredible business savvy. And he turned what was maybe between 5 and 10 million into like 400 million by 1940.
Yeah, and then as soon as you get into the presidency, into the Senate or House, you know, you can use insider trading to do all kinds of
stuff. Well, he was doing insider trading before he got anybody in the House or Senate. When it was legal, though. It was legal. It was shady, unethical, but legal.
Okay.
This falls into the category, by the way, just quickly, of movies that we all wish get made by Hollywood, and if they make one, we should go see it.
Yeah. Not just because of that. Right. This is a good movie.
It's a great movie.
It is a good movie.
It's a good movie.
My daughter, who's 18, I thought she was going to be so bored.
Right?
She loved it.
Loved it.
Loved it.
I watched it with 20-somethings. They loved it.
Yeah.
They loved it.
But it only brought in $6.2 million. I don't know what it cost to make, but it was only seventh. So go see it. It's really good. It's really good.
Really good.
How did it do? Did it have a lot of theaters or no?
Let's see. It's in...
You guys work that out. I need to bring Troy Walker in.
Oh, cool.
Troy is Troy's actually a friend of yours that you and Doc found on the Blaze Radio Network.
Mm-hmm.
And I met him. Troy? What was it? A week ago?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
A week ago.
You guys came down, and you're just one of the most honest, decent, honorable guys I think I've met. You know, you shake a man's hand, you look him in the eye, and you can usually tell. And you are so sincere. What you're trying to do is you're making these wooden flags, and they're really great, and they're great to hang on the wall and everything else. And but you're not making any of these for your profit. You're a former military man, and you are trying to bury the dead of some of these servicemen that come back and kill themselves.
Yes, sir. Not only do we pay for suicides, but we pay for any veteran who cannot afford a funeral.
Because there's no other recourse for them. Right, Troy? There's the VA provides
them
up
to... That is
true.
The VA only...
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Yes, they provide up to $300. They provide another $362 if you die at the VA. That's why you see a mass of suicides at the VA, because they're trying to get that extra $362.
Oh, my gosh. That's the first I've heard of that.
Oh,
wow.
My gosh.
Yep.
Wow. And it might not even be, it might not even be 300, right, Troy? They start at $25.
No. Yeah. Like I said on your show, we have yet to see two payments the same out of 126 funerals. It's anywhere between $26 and $298 is what I've seen.
Jeez.
Wait. Well, I mean, I can't, and I've never paid for a funeral. But I can't imagine that getting somebody buried is cheap. Isn't that, I mean, even if you go cheap, that's in the thousands, isn't it?
Yep.
Yes, sir. And you get free burials at national cemeteries. However, you have to pay for the coffin, transportation, and embalming of the individual, which usually runs anywhere between $25 and $3,500.
My mom's funeral last year was $15,000.
Oh, my gosh.
Yep.
And that wasn't extravagant.
Not at all.
Okay, so Troy, first of all, let me just give the information. Buy one of these wooden flags. They're great. You can hang them on your wall, and all of the proceeds go to help people out. Dogtagfurniture.com. Dogtagfurniture.com. How much are they? About $100?
They start off $125, and that includes free shipping. And then for every logo you want, it goes up from there.
Okay, so Troy, tell me about the, I think it was a World War II veteran that you just buried.
Yes, sir. Sergeant Whelan, he dropped out of high school, and it was 8 weeks and 2 days after his 18th birthday, he landed on the beaches of Normandy for the first time.
Mm.
He went through Normandy, got wounded, got a Silver Star at the beaches of Normandy, went through France, got wounded again. They sent him to Bastogne for R&R to heal. And we all know what happened at Bastogne. Where he received his third Silver Star and his second Purple Heart.
Wait. Three Silver Stars?
Yes, sir.
Wow.
Holy cow. Okay.
Mm.
And three, he ended up getting his final third Purple Heart when he was just crossing the border into Germany when he lost his foot. He came back to Minnesota. He worked in a factory all his life. Made some bad investments, 08. Ended up in assisted living. And then when he died, they took all his assets and they called the VA and said, hey, come and get your veteran. And the VA goes, no, we don't do that. We'll give you $300, up to $300.
Gosh. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, man.
So how did you find out about it?
The casualty. Well, actually, I have ties with the Minnesota Casualty Office, who ended up calling me. The National Guard ended up calling me and say, "Hey, we have this veteran here. We don't know what to do with him. And we heard you pay for funerals. Will you take care of him?"
Oh.
And that's when I saw his service record, and I'm like, "This guy's. You know, these are the kinds of people that need to be remembered forever. They fought for us. They endured the worst of the worst, and they should at least get a burial."
Mm. Boy, that doesn't even sound like a sentence that should be, that needs to be uttered. Mm-hmm. They deserve a burial. Troy, I can't thank you enough. And again, just meeting you just last week was a thrill for me. You know, it's nice to meet people who are so genuine and are so beyond the self-service and gratification. And what you guys are doing is really, really remarkable and good. And thank you for that.
Well, thank you so much for having me and for everything you've done. And, you know, we're the only veteran organization that does this. Every other veteran organization, nonprofit, stops the minute the veteran dies. We're the only ones that go beyond that.
Can people just make a donation? Can they go to you and make a donation?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Please make donations. That way the 100% of your donation goes towards the funeral fund. We have to sell 45 flags to pay for one funeral. Average funeral is, we pay out an average of $3,600. 100% of the proceeds goes to pay for burial. I do not take a salary, neither does my wife. My mother-in-law is going to be answering phones today, and I got two helpers in the shop today, all volunteers.
Awesome.
DogTagFurniture.com.
Thank you so much, Troy. Appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
You bet.
He gets nothing out of it.
I know.
Nothing.
He's just a former service guy, and he's like, I needed to do something to help. Just and he said, I could not believe that no one pays for these guys' funerals.
Out of 72,000 veterans organizations, zero until Troy paid for funerals. Zero. It's amazing.
So go to the website now. It is dogtagfurniture.com. He needs a better website.
<No. laughs>
dogtagfurniture.com. But call them up. Make a donation. You can buy the flag if you want. They're nice. You can hang them on the wall. Or just, as he said, you know, they have to pay for the wood and the shipping and everything out of that. If you don't need the flag, just make a donation, because these are remarkable people. A three-time Silver Star winner. And no one was going to bury him. Remarkable. DogTagFurniture.com. Back in a minute. It's amazing how you can do something in your life and then and do something really, truly remarkable. And then it's meaningless to later generations. I mean, a three-time Silver Star winner, man, I wish I would have known him. I wish I would have been able to talk to him. You know, did anybody talk to him towards the end? What was that like?
Glenn Beck.
Welcome to the program. I'm glad you're here. There's a couple of stories. One of the big stories on the Blaze today is the woman who bashes Mike Rowe's Worth Ethics Scholarship. Her son was applying for a scholarship to become a welder. And she read the pledge that he had written. And can you look up his pledge real quick, Stu? He wrote a pledge, and it's a sweat pledge, and it's good.
It's
skill and work ethic aren't taboo.
Yeah, that's what the pledge means. Mm-hmm. And it basically, it's like, you know, you got to work hard, you got to take responsibility for yourself, everything else. So Karen Siegel said she was appalled when her son showed her the sweat pledge requirement. She said, "Where did you come up with this nonsense? There's so many things wrong with this document, I don't even know where to begin. Suffice to say, we will not be applying." So Mike Rowe wrote and said, "To be clear, I have absolutely no interest in paying for the training if he doesn't share my opinions on the importance of hard work ethics, a positive attitude, delayed gratification, and personal responsibility. Sorry, but I made a promise to the people that contribute to this fund, and I'm not going to bend the rules. Fortunately, lots of scholarship funds will hand out money with no strings attached, and if you poke around, I'm sure you'll find one that's more in line with your worldview. But it's been my sad duty to inform lots of angry parents that this particular pile of free money might not be for them or for their children." I love Micro. We'll see you at 5 o'clock on the Blaze TV with the latest on Russia and what comes next.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.